Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 14th, 2014. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott. Look at the Irish Long.
Look at the Irish.
Well, I didn't really know when to celebrate St. Paddy's Day because it's kind of in the middle of our two shows now, right?
So yeah.
I just said, I'm going to do it now. So.
Wow, so you're starting your buzz early.
Yeah, I got my green beer out and sauerkraut and Lucky Charms and...
Sauerkraut?
Don't they eat sauerkraut?
That's German.
Oh.
Sauerkraut is
German. Well, I wasted some perfectly good cabbage this morning then. What do they eat in Ireland?
Potatoes.
Potatoes.
Remember the potato famine and all that?
Okay. I do have some mashed potatoes in the fridge, so. All right. I'll correct that egregious error after the show.
Do you ever see the Family Guy episode when he goes back to Ireland to meet his real dad?
I think so.
And you're like, is it true that they drink that much in Ireland? And they're like, no, it's not true. And then they show the plane landing on the runway, and the runway's covered in beer bottles. And they have to push all the beer bottles aside with the plane as they're landing. I'm Irish. I have some Irish in me.
I thought I did, but apparently it must be German, so.
Yeah, no. Yeah, because you swallowed a bunch of it, you mean? That's gross.
Oh, man. All right. So from one non-poker topic to another non-poker topic, but I plan to make the second one into a poker.
Eventually.
So it's a little different, right?
Yeah.
All right, so have you heard of this documentary called Inequality for All?
No.
It just came out this year, I think, and it's by Robert Reich. He used to be a labor secretary of the United States, and he's an economics professor. Got a little bit of a buzz.
Gee, I wonder why I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I know. It's right in your wheelhouse, right?
God.
It stars Matt Damon, so, you know.
Oh man.
So yeah, I watched it last week, and this is not going to be a political show here, but I mean, obviously, there's a political aura over this documentary, right?
Right, right.
But in short, what the concept was is Robert Reich was trying to illustrate what happens when the gap between the really rich and the rest of us gets really, really wide.
I got a pair of cargo pants there.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah, it's very, very on sale. The gap between the rich and the poor.
Oh, man.
It's on the corner of Houston and 42nd Street, I think, is where it is.
See, you're one of the one percenters, because yeah. I can't afford to go to the real Gap. I got to go to the Gap outlet. But the general idea was, you know, anytime the gap gets really far is when our economy crashes, you know, which has happened twice in the past 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he's putting out this description of why we don't essentially want our economy to crash. All right, obviously very controversial, though, because if you are rich, then you want to keep your money, right? And if you're poor, then you want to be able to get rich, right? So it's a very interesting movie in that sense that it should work out. I mean, everybody should be somewhat interested in this, but everybody should be somewhat against it.
Okay.
Totally lost you, right?
No, I'm still hanging around.
All right, so anyhow, the reason I bring this up was because I was having a discussion with a poker player about this movie, because the other side of the political equation in this considers this gentleman and his concepts socialism. You know, they want to come and take all of our money and redistribute it to all the poor people, right?
Mm-hmm.
My opinion that the guy did not put out any specific ideas in this movie. He just wanted to raise the awareness level of the concepts behind it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, kind of a way to let rich people know, hey, eventually the people who make you rich are the middle class and the poor. And eventually when the middle class and the poor don't have any more money, guess what? You're not going to get any richer. So it's just a kind of a general concept kind of movie, right?
Okay.
So I was having a discussion with him, and then I found that I could use a poker analogy to explain this concept. And I think that's kind of cool because I haven't done that in a while. I know some of our listeners out there probably use poker analogies all the time when they're explaining stuff, and you probably have too, right?
Yeah, just yesterday I did it.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So see, you are going to be able to contribute to this this topic.
Okay.
So essentially, this is how I explain my concept, or not my concept, it's not my concept, this movie's concept through a poker analogy. So the poker analogy is if you're at a poker table and you are busting everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's a good thing, right? You're making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole object of poker, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when you bust everybody at the table?
Is it a tournament or is it a cash game?
Well, let's say a cash game.
Then if they don't fill the seats with more people, that's all you could do. You can't play anymore.
Game over, right?
Yeah.
You've maxed out your earnings potential.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and I'm not saying that you should tank a hand or anything like that. I'm just saying you should be cognizant of the fact that you've got to keep getting more people into the game that have the money that you can win from, right?
Yeah.
So if you just end up, let's say you're at your local casino and you're just like light years ahead of everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just bankrupt the economy there and no new players come in, the poker room closes. Is that the most optimal playing strategy for you?
No way.
Probably not, right? Because you're never going to make any more money.
That's
so
right.
The idea is to probably train some of those bad players just enough that they're going to be good enough that they're going to generate more money so the poker economy continues, and you're still going to get a full share. I mean, your fair share of it, right? You're just going to get your fair share of a bigger pot from the poker economy. Versus if you don't train these people and you just bankrupt them and they're gone and now you're done. Now you got to go out and, you know, win a blackjack or something.
So your analogy then is when you're at the table with these subpar players, then you're saying, hey, you know, you probably should have folded there. You started giving them sort of instruction at the table because you're training them as if you would
be in the economy. Yeah, maybe not at the table because that's kind of weird. But, I mean, I think there should be some sort of responsibility for you, or you should self-see a responsibility to make sure the economy, your poker economy, continues to flourish and grow. Because when it dies, then you're not going to make any more money.
Yeah.
So I don't know necessarily at the table saying, hey, you know, you really should have. Although, I mean, maybe you do. I mean, I do that every once in a while. I'm like, you know, hey, you know, had you not checked there, I would, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But really more, it's about, you know, contributing maybe back to the economy, maybe, you know, teaching a class or bringing an instructor or buying books and giving up. I don't know what it is. All I'm saying is that if the economy dies, poker economy dies, you're going to die with it.
Yep.
And the same thing in the real economy. If the real economy dies, the rich people are going to die as well, too.
Yep.
So I was just happy I was able to use a poker analogy that seemed to make sense.
So if we've kept any listeners since this show started... No, I did the same thing yesterday. Jeannie and I walk every day now. We do power walk like 3 to 4 miles, just depending on how we're feeling. And she had been gone all week back home in Connecticut for some family stuff. And so she didn't walk while she was up there because it was 17 degrees. So when she got back, you know, I figured out she might want to take it easy. And we're walking and we're getting to the 2 mile marker. And she's like, are we walking more than 2 miles today? And I'm like, in my head, I'm thinking, no, let's not walk 2 miles. I don't feel like walking more than 2 miles. I want to stay home, you know. So, but I said, no, hun, it's totally up to you. If you want to walk more, I'm glad to walk more. And then when we got to the 2 mile marker, she kept walking, and I was like, oh, you call my bluff, hun. And she's like, well, I was like, I'm all in with 7 deuce because I did not want to keep walking. And so, you know, there's always instances. I mean, that's obviously not really an analogy, but there are always instances where poker creeps into my conversation. And sometimes it's analogy, sometimes it's just, you know, funny remarks or whatever. But absolutely, always using poker analogies to help explain things to people. A lot of times it's always, you know, imagine when you're at a table and you have this. Well, that's what it's like when you're doing that, you know. And so I do it all the time. Absolutely all the time.
Yeah, particularly effective when you're talking to poker players. About
yeah, if you're not talking to a poker player, it falls on deaf ears. But, I mean, yeah, generally everybody that I talk to plays poker, essentially, or... You know, and if not, then it's bowling. I have a bowling analogy for them because they bowl. I only talk to bowlers and poker players. So, All right,
you
so
know what I mean? So inequality for all. If you get a 9 pins on the first ball, right, you only have one more pin you can get on the second ball.
That's
so,
right. That's right.
You're better off just throwing the gutter on the first ball.
Yeah, keep
you get the most.
Just
on the
picking off
ball.
A few pins on the corners and never really hit the head pin and strike. Yeah. All right, we got a letter from Adam Bergeron.
Bergeron. No, I don't know.
I have no idea. It could be Bergoin, but
well, I'm learning French on this new app, this Duolingo app. It's really cool. It's a lot of fun, but I don't know why I'm thinking that Adam Bergeron is French, but I'm just walking around the house, you know, making everything sound French now.
I'm going to call him Adam B.
Adam B?
Adam B. And he says, so I don't get to play at my old home game as much as I used to. So when I do, I get excited. Excited to see everyone, excited to play poker, just excited. Tonight, I went and we started playing No Limit Hold'em like always. I was up 2.5 buy-ins when I suggested Crazy Pineapple. Said my theory was, and this is a horrible theory, I listen to Scott and Chris talk about this game all the time, so I feel like I have an edge. I'm going to increase my stack even more. Yeah. There's where you went wrong, buddy. Just because we're telling you how to play don't mean it's the right thing to do. Believe me. So he said everyone was happy to try it out, and guess what happens? I end the night down 3 buy-ins. 3! I never imagined one extra card could screw me over so hard that I would leave 3 buy-ins in the hole. And the guy who normally loses every week, well, he was up 4 buy-ins. No wonder it's called Crazy Pineapple. Despite my ass kicking, I still think it's a great game for a home game and is especially good when shorthanded like we were when I called it. Wow, Adam. Yeah, just because we talk about it, that doesn't mean you're educated in it. Believe me, this game is brutal. And you know what's even worse is Tahoe.
Yeah.
When they get to keep all 3 cards till the end and use any combination of the 3 cards. Oh, man. Except for all 3 of them. That game. My father loves that game. He sticks around forever and backdoors into 4-card straights and 4-card flushes like every other hand. And but, you know, Pineapple, it's funny because we didn't always, matter of fact, the first few years we played that game in our home game, we didn't ever play it at No Limit, ever.
No.
But then lately, people have been calling it No Limit. I think it's because the person who's desperate at the end of the night
of course.
Is calling a game, and then the other person calls Crazy Pineapple, and the desperate person says, No Limit, and then, all right, and then they make it No Limit, but that's a game you don't... I mean, I guess playing at No Limit, if it was regular Pineapple, would be a piece of cake, because it would be just like Hold'em. If you get aces, you go all in, or no, whatever, and you throw away your card before the flop.
We've already
or something.
Discussed how not fun regular Pineapple is. So
yeah,
it's got to
be
crazy.
It's got
to
be crazy.
Enjoyable.
So, but yeah, I can't imagine that you went down 3 buy-ins after being up 2.5. That means you literally lost 5.5 buy-ins playing Crazy Pineapple. That's bad. That's crazy.
That's crazy. Well, first of all, Adam, I feel terrible for you, so I'm going to give you a free download of the free download Duolingo app. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Store and just download it for free. I think probably what Adam experienced, I think it's what we all kind of experience when we play Pineapple, Omaha, Cour Cheval, any of these games when you're adding additional cards to it, right?
Yeah.
The edge in that game always comes from the players that realize that you need to essentially tighten up. I hate to say tighten up because that's wrong, but
right.
You need to be more restrained with more cards out there. Generally, I think human nature obviously is to get excited. You have all these combinations, so you end up getting looser in your play, and you end up making bad decisions based on that, where you need to be more restrained in it. So that's going to be my guess with Adam, is that he heard us talking about it. He missed the part where we said, hey, be more restrained. Or maybe we just forgot to say that until now. And got in there and just got excited the fact that he had, you know, ace, king, queen, and then didn't know what to throw away or, you know, raise more than he should and or whatever. I don't know. But that's generally my experience with any time the first time players play games with more than 2 cards in their hand.
That is true. And we have talked about it on the show. We have mentioned that because one of the books that one of the classic poker books tells you the more cards you get, the more tight you need to be. And I can't remember. I know we've said it. We said it a million times because... yeah, it might have been. You know exactly when we said it probably was when we were doing the the 10 tips for apes every
yes,
month.
That's true. Yep.
That's definitely when we said it. So, I mean, that's going old school. That's going way back. So maybe Adam hadn't heard those shows. But yeah, the more cards you get, the tighter you need to be because there are so many cards out. Everybody else has all those cards too. And so all kinds of combinations are out. All kinds of possibilities are out. And if you're playing with the guy, and that's a perfect example, the guy always loses. Well, he wins. Why? Because he's got an extra card in there, and now he's seeing more possibilities to try to make his hand, and it's possible for them to come true. So, yeah, it's a crazy game, and that's why they call it that. And I like calling it. I don't mind playing it. It's just you really do need to understand that everybody has three cards, not just you.
Yeah, and I think it's tough, too, in a home game environment, too, because you're there to have fun. As he said at the beginning, you know, I'm just excited there to play poker, just excited, right?
Right, right.
So now you get this extra card, and you're like, oh, I'm excited. I mean, it's the same thing with the Courcheval. I mean, I played that terribly a couple times that I played it already with you guys. All the way back to Juarez when we played it. You know, I always played every hand of Juarez terrible. Yeah. Just because it was fun to play it all the way to the end and see the combination. So I'm not saying that Adam played it all through the end to see the combination. But I think you just get excited at a home game and you want to play it. And, you know, to me, I don't think it's that big. I mean, I'm not excited about losing three buy-ins, obviously.
Right.
But I think there is a price I'm willing to pay to learn the game and enjoy it at the same time that I'm comfortable with that other players may not be.
Okay, well, we got some cruise giveaways to talk about and a couple quick updates. Naples Fort Myers Greyhound Track in Florida will give away a package to the High Hand between 9 and 11 p.m. every Saturday in April. And Delaware's online poker site, which is awesome, is going to run $6.60 satellites on March 26th, April 1st, and April 8th for Dover Downs Antioch Poker Cruise Tournament on April 10th. More details on all of our cruises, including giveaways at Derby Lane here in St. Pete, Florida, can be found at antiupcruises.com. And don't forget, Running Aces Antiup Poker Tour event in Minnesota continues through Monday. And the 101 Casinos Antiup Poker Tour event near San Francisco will be April 7th to the 13th. Details can be found at antiuppokertour.com. I love all of our poker rooms, don't you?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, our poker manager at Dover was really excited that the lottery there picked up. That's essentially his word, picked up his cruise satellite to offer. So, you know, very odd, I shouldn't say odd, just different how Delaware does it. You know, they're all pooled together there.
Yeah.
So, very, very cool that we have a $6.60 satellite for a cruise tournament online now.
Now, let me ask you this. Could that mean that someone from Nevada could win our cruise now?
No, not yet, because they haven't...
They haven't done that yet, right?
They haven't combined the... Okay. They've agreed to combine, they just haven't worked out.
So eventually, though, if they continue to do this, all this, they will be able to,
eventually,
right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. But
so that's cool.
Of course, then, I don't know whether you want to play the $6.60 satellite to get into a $59 tournament all the way across country.
No, I know, but I mean, eventually something like that could happen where they're giving away our cruise, too.
That would be true, and that would be a different story, and that
cool.
would be awesome.
That'd be awesome. We're going to have to talk to the lottery. All right. Each week, we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call of Floor and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something fantastic. This comes from Pizza Boy, Tom Turley.
Love hearing you guys talk about Courcheval. It's a great game. It is brutal, but I think limit is the only way to play that. We play 1-2 with a $5 straddle usually. So with four or five players going to the pot, you're looking at $20-$25 easily before the flop, actually when the flopper comes out. So anyways, great game, and glad that you guys are talking about it. Scott, next time you come up to D.C., make sure to bring your bankroll and your pink slip for your car as well. We'll take that. Later.
It hasn't sold me on it. No. I still don't think it has to be pot limit.
You know, our home game, you weren't in the last one. And we actually didn't play Courcheval here. It didn't come up. But someone wanted to call it, and then someone else convinced them not to call it. but we started to talk about it, and someone there said, no, it's got to be limit. And then someone else was like, I thought it should be no limit. And then, so
oh my gosh.
Nobody agrees. And I know Dr. Frank, who we're going to talk about in a few minutes here, he wants it to be no limit because he had top set in one hand and came in third place, I think, on that hand. So, I don't know what to think. I don't know.
That's a good point. That's really the only argument for it being no limit is for people that just get the red ass because their sets don't hold up.
Yeah.
Because if there's no limit, then you had that set, you knew that you had that set, then, I mean, the proper play, well, I should say proper play, but an effective play to win the hand would be to go all in and really make somebody risk their stack when they know they're obviously behind. But I don't think that makes it the best way to play. I think that's just the best way to protect a set.
Yeah, that's right. It's the only way that you could probably properly protect your hand. And of course, you heard on the clip where if it's 1-2 with a 5, he calls it a 5 straddle, but if you had an automatic $5 bring-in, you know, if you want to enter the pot, it's not really 1-2, it's 5. They do that a lot in hold'em games. So
sure,
if you made it that way, then it's 5-5-5, then it gets back to you, and you have the set, and there's 25 in the pot, you know, now you can put some serious money out there to protect your hand. But if you're playing 25-cent, 25-cent, and you can come in for 25-cent, you know, it's not something that you're going to be able to protect your hand with, you know, effectively, because everyone in front of them has got $200 or whatever, so, or $200.
And again, I'll say this, protecting your hand is not always the best
right, that's true too.
Way to play.
That's true too. It's just that it seems like everybody gets sucked out on the river in these games when there's one card showing a red.
Which I think is why I'd like to play it again. I mean, because I think if people are concerned about that, I think they're looking at this game incorrectly. Much like Limit. That's why I still like to play Limit, because I think people still look at Limit through the eyes of a no-limit player, and that's incorrect, and that's an advantage for me.
So, when you said that you weren't completely sold on it being pot limits, and then you're leaning toward the limit then, right?
Because you don't I'm just saying it doesn't have to be pot limit. I think his point is it has to be pot limit.
Yeah.
And I think it's like any Omaha variation. It could be any. It's just a matter of your style of play. You know, I think certain games lend itself, like high only, I think, lends itself to be pot limit. Where high-low lends itself to be limit in general. So I would think I would skew more towards Courcheval since it's high-low being limit because of that. But I'm also not in the gambit camp of PLO 8 being a bastard game. you know, I see his point, and I don't necessarily disagree with him, but I still like playing at pot limit. So so I'm not saying that when Turley invites me over next time that I wouldn't play pot limit Courcheval with him. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be pot limit.
We shouldn't rename it. Instead of PLO8, we should just call it Plate.
Plate?
All right, playing Plate. I mean, you don't pronounce the O. It's like silent, like in the French language or something. So you get that app, see, just how you would know.
Oh, yeah. Oui, oui.
Okay, call the floor here. If you find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. We'll have our Annie Up Poker Tour tournament director, Sam Minitello, tell you how he would have ruled. This comes from Dr. Frank, like I said.
Dr. Frank, he seems to, like, he's the nicest guy ever, right?
Yeah.
How can you not like Dr. Frank, right? But he seems to always get himself in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or not him himself. But
he sees it. He finds it.
Yeah.
Trouble finds him. Yeah. you know what else I noticed too is Frank gets out and plays a lot more than he leads on.
Yeah,
I mean,
he does.
You know, he's always like, oh, I'm always working. I can't come to that home game. Can't come to that. But all of a sudden, we get these three emails from, oh, I went to the. Well, hey, figure it out, buddy. Come to our home game more often. He says, all right, I was playing 1-1 no limit cash game in a Florida card room. A married couple was at my table.
Aww, I love that cute.
In one instance, the husband folded his hand face up, giving his wife some information that the players who acted before her did not have. She immediately folded too. Later, the husband raised preflop, the wife called, and everyone else folded. The board was ragged and unconnected, and they both checked it down the showdown. He turned over aces, and she had jacks. I asked him why he didn't bet his aces, and he said, because I want to sleep in the bed tonight, not on the couch.
Couches. So underrated.
Especially if you have the right couch, man.
Oh, yeah. Our couch is awesome.
Your couch is monstrous.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
I've never seen a couch as big as yours.
She's like, you can go sleep on the couch. And I'm like, thank you.
Yes, ka-ching. So he said, I was leaving the table, so I didn't challenge the ethics of the soft play. Later, I asked a dealer his opinion of what a foreman or a floor supervisor would have said about that. What happened. He said, in a 1-1 game, they probably wouldn't do anything about a husband soft playing his wife. It's not that big a deal. If it was a 2-5 game, though, they'd probably not allow it. This sounds bizarre to me. Is it common for a room to allow friendly soft play between couples at lower limits?
All right, Sam says, I don't think the size of the game matters when it comes to soft play. Individuals are still playing with their own money, and this should have been properly addressed. You don't have to scold the guilty party, just politely ask them to uphold the integrity of the game. If it then persists, then I would have to not allow them to play at the same table anymore. It's also to protect the offenders as well, just because you never know when another player could say or do something that could escalate into a more difficult situation.
Yep, 100%. Hey, we're all playing with money.
Yeah, this kind of goes back to, I think, a couple episodes ago we were talking about the guy that walked into the locals' casino.
Yeah.
He was the only outsider. So, again, it's one of those things where, by the letter of the law, absolutely, I mean, everybody should be playing on the up and up. I think really what it comes down to here is that there probably are a lot of floors or even poker managers that know that this is incorrect, but they also know it's not good business for them to upset the couples that are in there every day if they're at a 1-1 game. So, again, I'm not justifying at all. I'm just giving a real-world example of why I think you see this more often than you probably should, or more often than you think you should.
Well, what does Sahara think?
She is very upset because I never let her and Draper play at the same table.
The other thing that's sort of insulting about it when the dealer says that is, okay, so are you saying my money's no good here? Are you saying that I am not a good enough player, that I'm a piece of crap, that I shouldn't get the same, you know, the same rules and treatment as everyone else in this building? And that's what it's coming down to when you say that to them.
And that's definitely one way of perceiving it, and probably a very – I certainly wouldn't criticize anybody for thinking that. I think in a real-world example, I'm not surprised by the answer that Frank got from the floor that wasn't obviously – making a ruling at that table.
Right.
Perhaps if Frank had said something at the table, had the floor come over, I guarantee you the answer would have been different. But in private, again, I think it's just one of those things like, you know, hey, it's 1-1. You know, if you're really concerned about soft play at a 1-1 game, then maybe you need to move up to the 1-2 or the 2-5. And, you know, just let these old couples have their fun at the very low limits, even though technically that is terrible.
Yeah.
But in a real world, I think that's a reasonable thing for a manager or floor to say, and I think it's also reasonable if you're uncomfortable with that not to play there.
Okay.
So.
Very good. Well, we get to figure out what O'Malley's move is going to be today. It's a complete episode. Let's refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. We are still at that same 10-20 no-limit hold'em game, and we now have 3,700 in front of us. It's folded all the way around to us on the button, and we see the King of Hearts, Jack of Clubs. This normally isn't a hand we'd want to get involved in, but perhaps we can raise here and pick up $30. We make it $60 to go. The small blind calls, but the big blind folds, and we're going to a flop heads up. With 140 in the pot, it comes down the Jack of Hearts, 10 of Diamonds, 4 of Hearts. This is a decent flop for our hand, and once the small blind checks, we decide to bet. This player is a solid player, tight and aggressive, but has bluffed on a semi-frequent basis, if he feels like he can get a player out. He sits with around 1,600. We make a $100 stab at the pot, and he calls. The pot is now 340. And the turn is the 7 of clubs. Once again, our player elects to check. We want to keep this pot manageable, so we decide to check behind. The pot's the same, and the river is the Jack of Spades. The small blind now leads out for 150. This is an interesting bet. Perhaps he has a jack as well? I wish we could say we were happy with the size of the pot and we just called, but we make a raise to 400. Our opponent furrows his brow and thinks for a short time before shoving his chips into the middle. Is he Hollywooding? Could he have played 9-8 this way? Jack 10? Ace Jack? A busted flush draw? Maybe he has King Jack as well. What's the move?
I think heads up, I'm fine just calling behind on this river when my opponent suddenly comes alive on the end. But since we poked the bear, I think we have to either get paid off handsomely or learn our lesson about poking. I think this call is made easier for me since we will have about $2,000 left if we're wrong, and I know that's a bad way of looking at it, but again, we're in a game that we shouldn't be in. We talked about this, you know, 2 weeks ago, right? And at this point, you know, I think that has to matter. I look down, I got $2,000 left. If I'm wrong, boom. It's not going to hurt me too bad. And if I'm wrong, then I just learned a lesson, but I'm not bankrupt.
Wow. Okay, well, to me, I mean, I don't see myself...
You're stupid!
I don't see myself calling that much money to just learn a lesson. I think that I can fold here, but I was going to say that there are two hands I just can't get out of my head, and it's Jack 10 and 9-8. Those are the two hands that what I said was, would a player defend his small blind with either of those hands? Absolutely. Would someone play it the exact same way our villain did if he had one of those two hands? I think so. And there are other hands that beat us that might play it that way. Two, would a worse jack have played it this way? Maybe queen jack. And that's the only hand we really beat other than a bluff. I'm folding. I mean, I realize it's, you know, we're got a lot of money left over, but I really don't really remember how much we had when we sat down or, you know, I started with 3,700. If I'm going to be done with 2,000 and all I got is a lesson learned out of this, I think I can let it go.
Again, it's not my lesson being learned.
It's always easy to spend other people's money, Scott. I know that's easy. But in my mind, I just can't let go of those two hands. Those are the types of hands that I would love to defend my blind with. And I just, whenever we do these things, whether they're hands of the week or anything like that, I can't imagine anything but the best hand beating us all the time. I'm just a defeatist. I don't know. But I'm real interested now in seeing what happens. Let's go to the videotape.
Hello again. This is why you should never play the rookie, no matter what your position is at the table. I wish this hand had a happier ending, but it doesn't. We called and watched in horror as the small blind rolled over 9-8. Well played, sir. We are now back to our original buy-in and an uneasy feeling in the pit of our stomach. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, steer clear of trap hands. I wish I had.
Well, you know, I was hoping we would get paid off handsomely, of course, but since we didn't, we're still winners because we learned a lesson about poking the bear.
That's right, buddy. Chalk one up for that for you.
I guarantee you, O'Malley's not going to make this mistake again. I mean, that's $1,700 mistake or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah, $1,700.
I bought cars for a lot less than that.
Man, that's brutal. Absolutely brutal. Well, it's nice when I make the right move once in a while. You know, I'm tired of feeling like, you know. Like
you really should play with O'Malley's money more. It's more fun.
Yeah, it's a lot easier.
You got all scared money. Like it was your own money. I'm like, hey, woohoo, I'm free rolling.
All right, so he learned a lesson, a very valuable one, and we get to. I'm glad he still does the show. You know,
just take a lot of abuse from us.
Yeah, the money he makes from us helps supplement his income to make him play poker. So that's good.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And our old friend Vic G is back this week.
All right.
Always brings us good Hands of the Week.
Panhandle hands.
And here's why Vic is one of my favorite listeners, right? Because at the very top of the email, it's, here's the background. I know Chris cannot accurately analyze the hand without this crucial information.
Thank you. Of course, Vic's always giving me guff on the forum, so I think he's just teasing me.
Well, I know exactly that's why he is.
Oh, okay.
It's not. I mean, I don't enjoy the fact that he's giving us all this information. I just like the fact that he knows that you can't properly analyze a hand without.
Yeah, I need everything.
All right, so here is the bullet point information for this hand, all right?
Okay.
1-2 no limit hold'em, 9-handed with a $400 max buy-in. Actually, it's kind of rare to see a $400 max, isn't it? I think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't think it's odd. It's just I've never seen it. 5 hours into the session, a very passive table with no 3-bets, mostly older men.
Okay.
My kind of 1-2 game. It's also super bonus day, where the room is paying out $100 every 10 minutes. He says, yes, 10 minutes, to the highest hand in the room. But there's got to be $20 in the pot. It must reach the river, and both whole cards must play. The villain in this hand has been the most active at the table, often opening for raises between $8 and $16. He almost always C-bets and has folded to a few min raises. Oddly enough, he's never shown his hand in an in any sizable pots for the entire five-hour session. He either bets his opponents off the hand, or his opponents show their cards and he mucks. The two times he's voluntarily shown his hand is when his opponent folded to his turn bet, and again when he opened for $10 and everyone folded. Both of these times he showed pocket aces.
Yeah.
He was also the only player to buy in for the $400 max, while the rest of the table bought in for $200 or $100. And Vic says, I have shown a few hands where I have lost with a weak kicker. I'm in the one seat. The villain is in the nine seat, so the dealer is between us.
Okay.
All right. Any information he forgot to give you that you need?
What was the guy wearing? Did he have a flannel? Because guys who wear flannels, like they like to bluff. So I need to know that. I need to know. And also, was his hair parted on the left, down the middle? Was he bald?
Because he probably has one of those government plates in his head, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, if he's bald and his head's shiny, I could see the reflection of his cards.
Part's just never going to be right.
Yeah, I need to know. I need to know all these other details. So I this is a caveat. If I get this wrong, it's because Vic didn't give me enough details.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That'll be his cross to bear.
Okay, here we go.
All right, so it's folded around to the villain in the middle position, who raises to $15. We're on the hijack and look down at ace of hearts, king of spades, and he says we had bought him for $200, and they're sitting with 432, no squiggly line, and the villain has us covered.
Okay. Well, we have position. We have a really good hand. This guy, to me, from what he's told me, doesn't play just quality hands, because the only hands he chooses to show in 5 hours are aces, and he's doing that intentionally.
Of course.
He does not want us to think that he plays crap, but he plays crap. So I think we're ahead right now, and I think we're going to 3-bet this guy and make it like 50 to go.
In
position.
I like that a lot. I like the fact that, one, we're at a passive table. Two, that we don't 3-bet. No one's 3-bet before, so I think the 3-bet will get some respect, right?
Yep.
Ace-king, drawing hand.
That's right.
I'll pause for Gambit to get upset. He's at a baseball game right now. So I like that. And then I also like the fact that what we've been told about the villain is that while he is a bully, he can be easily bullied back, right?
Mm.
I mean, we're going to know what he has here. If he's got something really big, he'll probably shove or do some crazy here. And if not, then we'll put him on the defensive, and we'll be able to probably be in a good position to win this pot on the flop, regardless of what comes.
Yep. I like all the information we have. I still want to know if he's bald. other than that, I think we're gonna 3-bet him here and raise to probably $50 or so is what I want to do.
All right, well, our hero has a different plan. He says, I want to trap him, and I'll assume he'll c-bet. I've got position on him, and I decide to just call.
I don't disagree with that. There are times where I'll just call ace-king and mix it up, but I don't know that Vic has done that all day. I don't know if he's mixed it up or not. So coming in cold, generally I want to raise this hand. But if he has raised it before and shown it down before and blah, 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 then, yeah, it's a nice little mix-up play. And sure, this guy does c-bet. You know, the problem is that when you missed it completely and it comes with crappy cards that you think he might be holding because he was just making a crappy play or something less optimal, now you're like, all right, this guy c-bet, but he probably hit it because I missed it and I had quality cards. And then you got to, you know, have the stones to pony up. So I don't know. I like taking control of a hand when I have control, which I wouldn't have cut off, so I don't know. But okay, go ahead. Just call. That's fine.
But I like the fact that he has a plan.
He has a plan. That's right.
So, I mean, it's not just a willy-nilly thing. So
that's
got
right.
A plan.
That's right.
So give him credit for that. He goes on to say, while ace of hearts, king of spades looks good, the villain might have a middle pair. It's a good trapping hand. Besides, if I raise and he re-raises, then I might be flipping for my entire stack. Actually, I don't think he would, because if he re-raises me here at a table that's never 3-bet, I'm happy laying down ace-king.
Yeah.
But that's just me. It says the rest of the table folds and we're heads up.
Cool.
$28 in the pot, $3 rake plus $2 drop accounted for. The flop comes ace of spades, four of clubs, jack of spades.
Okay.
And of course that gives us top pair, top kicker, and backdoor nut flush and straight draws. And as predicted, the villain puts out a C bet of $15 without much hesitation.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess there is some. I'm thinking that we probably need to protect a little bit. There are two spades. Even though we got backdoor spades, we don't have immediate spades. You know, and the same thing with Broadway. I mean, this guy could very well have king, queen. He could have, you know, anything. He could have queen 10 for all we know. And if he didn't think much about it, you know, then he just seems like he's going through the motions like he's been doing for the last 5 hours. So I feel like we really need to sort of narrow down what this guy's going to do. If you want to call again, you know, I think you're taking a big risk by just calling again.
I agree.
So I would probably now make it 50 or 60. That's me, though.
Nope. Hey, we're sharing a brain today.
Okay.
Never good for the company.
Not that we're good.
Okay. He says, with the villain's action, I think I can rule out pocket aces and pocket jacks. He might have pocket fours. Maybe I'm wrong. I've seen him fold to min raises, so I don't want to scare him off, but I do want to bet something. After all, there are straight and flush draws out there. I also wouldn't mind taking down the pot now anyway. Those two seem to be at odds, don't they? I decided to raise to $30.
Yeah, min raise.
All right, well, the min raise has worked. I mean, again, if you're trying to win the pot, which I'm fine winning the pot now, you know, I think there's a lot of danger in continuing with this hand. So, I get a little bit more at him, that's fine.
Well, what bothers me, and again, it's lack of information here, because when he says min raises have worked before, that doesn't tell me anything. I don't know what the texture of the board was when it worked last time. How do I know he just didn't miss it the last two times he min raised and it worked? I mean, he could, for very well all intents and purposes here, be slow playing instead of fours like he could possibly. So a min raise to me is not. You have to ask yourself why you're betting. Why would he min raise here? Why min raise? And because it worked before. That's not really a reason. The real reason to bet here, if you're going to min raise, is because you got an absolute huge hand and you want this guy to stick around. Here, do you really want somebody sticking around when you can't really put him on a hand? I don't agree with the min raise. I would want my bet to be effective, and there's got to be a reason why you're doing it. I think we have a new column coming out in our April issue that addresses these kind of problems too. So look for that. But me, I'm gonna raise. So more than that, I'm gonna raise to like 60, because I just think this guy needs to pay to kick our ass.
He needs to pay for what he's done to us.
That's right.
All right, so we min-raised to 30. The villain thinks for a while and seems like he's in the fence. Not even on the fence. He's, like, in the fence.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we must be playing in Jersey or something with the mobs. some thought, he just calls. Now, we say, I think if he had a big ace or even pocket fours, he would re-raise to protect against the flush and straight draws, or just to try to push me off of my hand.
Well, that's interesting that he says that, don't you think? He says that if he had that, he'd protect his hand, but we're not protecting ours properly.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, I can see a reverse trap going on here. What if he has ace jack?
Yeah,
and he probably properly puts us on ace queen or ace king, and thinks that we've been pushing him around, and we're trying to do exactly what we're trying to do, suck him in. And at that point, I don't want to scare you away. You know, if you got ace king, ace queen here, I want you to stay in this hand all the way to the end.
Yeah, yeah. Vic seems to be talking out of both sides of his mouth today.
It'd be awesome if you had two sides.
That'd be pretty cool.
Really, you only have
you have two side. Conversations at once.
That'd be great when you work at home. The cats would get lonely. All right. With 86 in the pot, the additional $2 rate counted for. The turn is the ace of diamonds, making the board ace of spades, four of clubs, jack of spades, ace of diamonds. And we see a great card for our hand. If the villain has the case ace, I have him trapped. This card was no help to the straight or flush draws. Action is on the villain, and he checks to us.
Okay. Well, now we got a bet, right? I mean, you could control the pot and check behind, but if this guy was drawing, now you give him a free card. And if he's got ace jack and he's got a full house bigger than ours, then we need to know that. I think if he comes alive and goes crazy on us, then we have to make a decision. But we have three aces with a king kicker, so.
I think we're up against two hands here. We're either up against a drawing hand, which means we have to bet to make them pay for the draw, right?
Right.
Or we're up against like ace jack or pocket fours or some hand that they were behind to. And this would be the street where I think he would try to get a little bit more value at, right? Because he's not going to check behind. I mean, I can't imagine he's got to check the river, assuming we're going to put another bet in. So at this point, it makes sense for him to raise here and see where we are. So we're going to find out our information here, we bet. We just checked, and he's got a monster that he's going to set the price for us on the river, and we're probably going to have to call that. I'd rather set the price myself.
Let me ask you, though, are there other hands? I mean, couldn't ace-queen or ace-10 in middle position in a tight, passive game be one of those hands?
Possible, yeah.
And the way he played it, he hit his ace with no kicker.
But even with those hands, then why would you not want to bet here? Because you're going to get called off, right? He's going to call, too. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's all the more reason to bet again.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that there's other possibilities here that would play the way he did. Because we're pretty far into this hand now. We should probably have some other range there.
I guess my ultimate point is that there's very little danger in betting here. You know?
Right.
He's got us crushed, or we got him crushed. The proper play is to bet here, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's bet. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would bet 50, 60, something like that. I'm not going to bet pot. I don't think that's needed here, so maybe 50.
All right. Herr decides to bet 30. He says, it's less likely that the villain has the case ace in his hand. He was hesitant about calling my flop raise, but 30 bucks is low enough that he may come along, or better yet, may try to push me off of the hand. Of course, I'm not going anywhere. He says, I can't see him playing Ace-X-Jack-X or Ace-X-4-X this way, and I've already ruled out pocket pairs. I'm still worried about the flush draw. Maybe he has Ace-X-Queen-X or Ace-X-10-X. He thinks I have a lower kicker. Maybe he has King-X-King-X or Queen-Queen. And the turned ace makes it less likely that I have an ace, so he's putting me on the hand like King-Jack. But as with my flop raise, if he folds, I'm happy with the pot, as it's been one of the bigger pots at our table in a while. Once again, the villain goes into the tank. I can't get a good look at him with the dealer between us, but I do see him look back at his cards. After a lengthy delay, he pushes out $90. What does this $60 raise mean?
It means that we need to just call now. I mean, I don't like that 30 bet, because if somebody's really aggressive, you're now sort of showing to me, sort of giving him a chance to say, this is kind of a weak bet. Maybe if I bet 100 or so, he'll let it go. You know, I know there's a little part of people that are saying, oh, it sounds like a please call me bet because it's so small. But there's also weakness in that bet, even though we're not weak. It's just one of those situations where I don't think that was enough of a bet. I think this guy, if he's doing what Vic wants him to do, it's great. You know, if he wants him to raise, because he said that in the description.
Right. Sure.
So I think I would probably call. I don't think I'd re-raise, because this guy has a nuts, then I can't get away from it. If I make it 270, that's all my stack. So I only have 400 or whatever in front of me. So
just listen to the O'Malley's moves, and we know not to poke the bear.
Yeah, so I'm fine calling and seeing what he does on the end. And if he sets a price that's reasonable, I mean, I have three aces with best kicker possible at this point, and it could even fill up to a boat. So I'm going to just call and hope that river's, you know, a king or another ace.
Yep.
Or even a jack. Even a jack, because that way he just counterfeits his jack.
True.
If he has one, so...
All right, so he says, what does the $6 raise mean? Maybe he thinks my $30 bet was weak. $6 bet has been the largest at the table in 5 hours.
Jeez.
Now 206 in the pot, what would you do? And Herr decides to call.
Yeah.
He says, I'm not planning on folding this hand. I don't 3-bet show because I think he might fold, and I want to let him bluff the river. Gosh, I think you got to give him credit for having you beat, too, don't you?
Unless he's just, like you said, he's trying to steal.
Hmm. But I think you still got to give him credit for the possibility.
Yeah, oh no, yeah. And you know what, though? I've noticed that a lot with Vic's hands. A lot of his hands, when he sends them in, he's like, I'm just trying to extrapolate because I know I'm kicking his butt. Every hand he seems to send in, he's like, he's hoping this guy... I always want to send people away, and he always wants to keep them in. and maybe it's because he knows the outcome, and I don't know, but it seems like a lot of his hands do that. So, let's see.
Hmm. He says, if his flush of straight gets there, if he hits his hand for a full house, well, so be it. Plus, I still have outs to the nuts. With 266 in the pot, the river is a 9 of clubs, completing a board of ace of spades, 4 of clubs, jack of spades, ace of diamonds, 9 of clubs. So none of those draws get there.
Right.
But he says, this time, without hesitation, the villain verbally announces a bet of $300. But he doesn't move any chips in the pot, and the action's on me. first of all, I'm going to tell him to put those chips in the pot, right?
Yeah, yeah. Put the chips in the pot, buddy, because you're not going to get up and walk away like they do.
Kind of subtle, too. I'm like, what's the bet? 300. Okay. It's hard to say because I don't see any chips in the pot.
Yeah, that's right.
Wink, wink.
I have to be fair here. I couldn't get away from this hand. I mean, if I'm playing at these levels and I got the three aces with a king kicker on this board, there's no straight, no flush.
It's tough, too.
If this guy's got ace jack or ace four, then or even ace nine, then we're just... You know, we're just very unfortunate, but there's no way I'm getting away from this hand. I didn't think he'd bet that much on the river, considering $60 was the biggest bet all day. But I don't think I can get away from this. Normally I'd fold because, you know, it's hand of the week, and, you know, usually we lose hands of the week, but in this case, I don't care. I'm calling. And I want him to put that money out there before I do.
It just seems like such a big... It seems like a protection bet, right, to me? Yeah. I mean, if he would have bet, like, 60 or something ridiculous like that, then I might be a little bit more suspect. Of course, I'd probably call that, too, because it's only 60, right? But the 300 just seems like... it's one of those weird things that I just don't know whether... I mean, he's got us crushed, and he's just trying to bet a lot, thinking that I'm thinking what I'm thinking, that second, third level kind of crap. Or he has nothing, and he's betting really big, thinking that we didn't raise him on the turn, so we can't be that confident. The 9 didn't change anything for anyone. You know, I can't think the 9 helped anyone in this hand.
And the preflop action, too, doesn't tell him that we have an ace by just calling. So he could be not believing us, too, and it doesn't matter what he has. He could be thinking that we were on the draw, or we were, you know, or something, and he's just not believing us, so he's just betting what he thinks he needs to win. Because that's what that raise was on the turn, too. It feels like... He's saying that $30 bet was weak. I'm going to make it 90 because I think I can do it to take this away from him. And when it didn't work and the draws never got there, now he's betting 300 just to with nothing. You know, that's one line of thinking that you could follow to get to a call here a lot easier than just calling because you have three aces. So I'm going to call.
All right. He says the $300 bet is more than the pot, which is already sizable and just happens to have me covered. I have 297 left in my stack. So it seems odd. The river didn't complete any flush or straight draws. Did he hit his kicker? Is he trying to push me off a hand with a busted flush draw? What hand could this guy have if he played any street like this? Maybe I'm calling for a chop. Since there's too much in the pot and my hand's too good to fold. I announce call and table my hand, and the villain shows ace of clubs, jack of clubs.
Oh, man.
For the nuts, rakes in an $863 pot. Plus, his hand holds up with a $100 high hand bonus.
$500, $200
Oh, and then of course he says, "Just to make this hand more interesting for Chris to analyze." I was actually the villain of the scenario.
Of course, what?
Which actually is interesting because you're analyzing Vic's hands previously, yeah. And I did the old, the very old.
What is this lately? Is it a prerequisite? Have you put out some sort of thing on Facebook that I wouldn't see that says, "Hey, make yourself the villain, but don't tell us till the end, so Chris gets screwed"? Very interesting. Of course, Vic won the hand, like he always does. I don't know. That's interesting. Interesting that, you know, so we were the villain, like we were also the person who did all the other stuff he was talking about earlier and everything, too?
I assume so.
Descriptions and everything? Okay. Yeah. So we're the passive player, or no, it was just a passive table.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, well, that's cool, I guess. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I guess I don't know.
I guess. I mean, it's interesting that when you had ace jack, you know.
The funny thing, go back to the flop, is where I think I said, you know, hey, if he's got ace jack, he wants to keep us in because we're trying to keep him in.
Yeah.
I think here's the problem. When we do the whole switcheroo, I think things usually get messed up.
Yeah.
And I don't think anything got messed up here, but I think some of the logic gets messed up because now we're projecting logic on somebody else, right?
Yeah.
And we don't really know what that other person's thinking. We know what we're thinking. So that makes it a little more difficult. But if we went back on the flop, I mean, I could see if we're going to buy Vic's logic of the hero slash villain, then I did think the kind of the slow playing the ace jack was the effective way to combat it, and that's exactly what Vic did.
So
and
if
then
the,
of course he did the raise the turn to, you know, try to get some more value out of it, and then called, and then made the river shove to make us think that he was weak.
Interesting.
And
he
fell for it all three times.
He essentially check raised the turn with the nuts, And once we called, he knew he had us. He knew we had to have an ace to do that.
That's true.
Or yeah. at least a real yeah. big flush draw. And so if the flush draws didn't get there, a $300 bet in the end isn't going to be wasted because he's not going to call you no matter what bet you make. And if he has an ace and you're hoping he has ace 9 or ace 4, then you're going to, you know, rake it in. So that $300 bet is pretty good. Huge yeah. bet. Huge bet. Interesting.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. Yep.
Yeah, interesting. Wow. All right, Vic, you got me again. Touche. Gotcha. I know that April Fool's Day is coming up soon, so you got me. All right, another good show, and looking forward to more interesting shows coming up. Scott, you're going on the road soon.
Yes, I am.
That should be fun. See what you have to report back for us, and I don't know. We'll see what else is going on. I got some other poker stuff going on in my head here that I think I might bring out in the show soon. So,
oh, excellent.
Stay tuned for that. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.